All right, welcome back. During that break, I just realized I actually had created a worksheet for this teaching that will be available on the website on Wisdom and Torah, and I will put it up on my website Rooted in Torah, which you'll be able to see the website addresses here below that you can check out. And it's just a quick 2-page worksheet that you can go through with this video. And I'd highly recommend it. That was one of the things that I learned. I was in the nuclear field in the Navy, so we had a lot of training, and one of the things that they taught us is that when you're actually having to fill out stuff while you're learning something, it helps you really help to incorporate it, understand it, and memorize it a lot better. So I'd highly encourage you to do that. And I would ask you, if you got the time, please get online. Give me some feedback, and really, I mean, with myself and Rico and Daniel and anybody, any teacher out there, give us feedback. Let us know, if you're enjoying it, if we're doing a good job, if there's, give us some if you want something changed, let us know. Let us help us help you better. Help us be able to equip you better to go out and incorporate these things into your lives and to teach other people what we're trying to relay here to you. So you can get on, you can get online, and you can leave comments on Wisdom and Torah. You can always email me. My email is rootedintorah@gmail.com. And you might be able on my website. You can also, I believe, leave some submission, some comments as well. So moving on here, we were talking about the transitional period in the life of the believer, and we're during our whole life, what happens? I mean, especially when you first come into Torah, what is the thing that really just nails you right as soon as you walk in the door? It seems like it's these trials, you got to give up eating certain foods. You got to give up doing certain things on certain days. You've got to learn how to give up Christmas and Easter and all these things, and learn how to deal with the pressures that your family is going to put on you. You're going through a transitional period where you're going to be tried and tested to see if you will remain faithful to the king. Just like in boot camp, they put us through all sorts of ridiculous things, waking us up early, making us do this and that, and all sorts of crazy stuff, things that we probably wouldn't ever use, but they're trying us to see if we would remain faithful to the oath that we swore to the government, right? And all of these things that we're doing, we're preparing ourselves for that final consummation, that just like Revelation 21 talks about being adorned as a bride for the Messiah. Another great example I forgot to mention is one that Rico really he uses in his laws of adoption. It blew me away when I heard about this, so I'm going to steal a little bit of it here. And that's the whole idea of going from being a foreigner to a U.S. citizen, right? You can't just go from being a foreigner and coming in and being a U.S. citizen. That's called an illegal alien, and that is it should be, it is, but it's not enforced. It's illegal to do, and you can get deported. You are not welcome in this country if you don't go through the proper channels, right? You have to be invited, just like God had to invite you into the Holy of Holies. You didn't just waltz in and say, "Hey, I did what the Torah told me to. What's going on, God?" Good way to get zapped. There's legal channels for becoming a U.S. citizen, right? If you're a foreigner, you apply for it. You have to be invited. Once you come here, you're not suddenly expected to maintain every. You're not. You are. You get a. I can't remember all the terminology. I apologize. But you come here and you live here as a stranger, essentially. And during that time period, you're expected to be learning the laws. And in fact, you have to go through a test, right, to make sure that you understand the laws of our country. And you go through all these different things. You go through this transitional period where you are in America. You're welcome, more than welcome, to buy stuff from us. You're held accountable for our laws. You might be given a little bit of leniency for some of the lighter. I mean, obviously, not to murder people, but you might be given some leniency on some of the lighter laws that maybe you didn't know about. But You had to be separated out from being that foreigner, and then you go through that transitional period. You're not immediately a U.S. citizen. Once you are a U.S. citizen, though, now you're fully accountable for all the laws, the responsibilities, but now you also have the full privileges as well. You could now vote. You could do almost anything. The only thing you can't do, and maybe there's a couple other things, but the only thing you can't do is become the president. None of us can become the Messiah. So, hey. And remember, and this is what, you had to be invited into the kingdom. What is our invitation into the kingdom? What does Yeshua say he is? Yeshua says, "I am the door." Yeshua is our invitation into the kingdom. He's the door. If you don't pass through the door, if you try to climb over the gate into the kingdom, you're going to get tossed out when in the end time comes. You have to go through the door to get into the kingdom. And remember, during that transitional phase, you may not be that full U.S. citizen, that full military member, or that full Israelite with all of the rights and responsibilities, but you're still held accountable. You still are Israel. You're not fully there. And I hope that's making sense. I hope I'm not offending you. If you need any clarification with that, please let me know. And I wanted to point out something. Let's go to Numbers 15, because I want to prove this point here about during this transitional period, you're still held accountable. Here we go. Numbers 15, verse 14. "And when a stranger sojourns with you, or whoever is among you throughout your generations, and would make an offering by fire, a sweet fragrance to Yahweh, as you do, so he does. One law is for you of the assembly and for the stranger who sojourns with you, a law forever throughout your generations. As you are, so is the stranger before Yahweh. One Torah and one right ruling is for you and the stranger who sojourns with you." Now let's look at that word for stranger there. Numbers 15, verse 14. Here we go. You can see it over here on this side of the screen. Here it is in Hebrew. The word is ger. H4116. Right? And if we click on that there, let's pull it up over here on the Strong's. H4116. Ger, properly a guest by implication, a foreigner and a stranger, right? And we know that this term ger, especially in the first century, became understood as a convert, right? And what would someone be doing? When you look at the Torah and how things were supposed to be, if someone is sojourning with them in the land of Israel, if they're actually living in the land of Israel with them, they're not doing that because they just want to, live there without serving their God. If you live there, you were make that was essentially like making the conversion process be the citizenship. You were essentially applying for citizenship by moving there, and that's why the stranger is required. If they want to bring a sacrifice, they can bring a sacrifice, and it even talks about it when you look at in Leviticus. If a stranger commits a sin, if they break one of the commandments, just like an Israelite, if they have to bring a chataat, the so-called sin offering or the purification offering, if they commit a sin that an Israelite has to do that for, they have to bring it themselves, because by living in the land and by committing that crime, they themselves defile the sanctuary as well. So how do we understand that? The same thing is happening. As soon as you make that commitment, as soon as you make that confession of faith, and you have your baptism, your mikvah, you are now part of the kingdom. You don't have all the same responsibilities that the mature believer has, if you want to call them that. But you have those same the same responsibility. If you commit a sin, you've got to make up for it. If you want to bring an offering of dedication, of consecration, of thanksgiving, you have the right to bring it. You are part of Israel, just not fully integrated yet. but still the same things apply to you. You're just learning how to become a citizen. I mean, it's the difference between a child in who's going through school and an adult who is now out in the workforce. That's the difference between this immature believer and the mature believer. One is learning how to live that way, the other one is living that way. And we, who are we to go up to someone who's learning how to live that way and condemn them because they're in the process of learning? Let them learn. You know, how many years did it take you to go through school? 12, you know, 12 years through grade school, plus maybe some kindergarten in there. You had, you know, maybe 4 years of college, 8 years of college, 12 years of college. You took, and then you had to have on-the-job training. It took you years to learn how to do something. How are we to now go and tell some, you know, new believer, oh, you're not saying the name right. You shouldn't say Lord. You need to have some derivation of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. You can't say Adonai. You need to be advanced beyond that point. Really? You're a Pharisee. You are a modern day Pharisee. The very people who Yeshua was railing against, you are doing that when you're going up to someone going, you're not doing that right. You know, there you can correct a brother. If you're doing something, if you see someone doing something wrong, by all means, give them, you know, hey, you know, let me share this with you. Let me show you. This is how I see it. This is how the scriptures. There's a word of correction there, but you don't go and say, oh, you're not saying the name right. I mean, especially, I mean, there's things that are black and white. I mean, let's face it. You know, if someone is committing adultery, homosexuality, murder, things like that, that's a very clear black and white line. We can go up to them and go, hey, you need to knock this off or you're out of here. But if they're not ready to say the name, if they're using Adonai instead of Yahweh or Yahuwah or whatever new derivation there is this week, if they're keeping the calendar a little bit differently than you, if they're going with the Jewish calendar or the new moon calendar, the sighted blue cheese moon calendar, you know, whatever calendar they're going with, hey, that's where they're at. They're in the process of learning. You can share that with them. If they don't believe you, it's not that big of a deal. The point of the feast, as we've been talking about here, the feast days are a rite of passage where you're supposed to be elevated in holiness, not bickering and arguing and dividing over which day it's supposed to be on. I mean, don't you think that God, if He really, you know, really was wanting us to keep it on an exact same day, you know, He could have been a lot more clear on this is how you calculate your calendar. But no. That wasn't the emphasis on the feast. He didn't give us the feast days so that we could, so that he could see if we knew how to calculate the calendar. That's not the purpose of them. The purpose of them is to come together in elevated holiness and worship the King, to have an audience with him. And if we're going to worship the King, can't we be together as one people instead of fighting over the silly things? You know, if it's the new moon, the blue moon, I don't, it's, it blows my mind that the number of moon calculations that come out. So finally, after they get through this transitional period, they go to the rites of incorporation. This is where physical circumcision comes in. This is where the Passover comes in. We can go here to Exodus 12, and this is exactly what Exodus 12 is talking about. Let me find it here real fast. Here we go. Exodus 12, verse 48. And when a stranger sojourns with you and shall perform the Passover to Yahweh, let his males be circumcised, and then let him come near and perform it, and he shall be as a native of the land. But let no uncircumcised eat of it. There is one Torah for the native born and for the stranger who sojourns among you. So when that stranger, when that convert is finally ready to say, I'm ready to be fully incorporated, I'm ready to take on the responsibility here, then let them be circumcised, and then they can partake in that Passover meal. You have the circumcision, which is that blood of the covenant, the sign of the covenant, the consecration of the life-giving member of your body, or the life the member of your body which procreates life, let's put it that way. You do that, and then you partake in the Passover, which is a covenantal meal. You're sealing the deal. You are now a full U.S. or full Israeli citizen at that point in time, right? And we can see this in Judith 14, verse 10. It reads, and this is apocryphal, but this shows us how the mindset was back then. When Achior heard all that God of Israel had done, he became a firm believer, and he was circumcised and made a member of the Israelite community, as his descendants are to the present day. So this Achior person was a Gentile, and once he heard what the God of Israel did, he became a firm believer, and then he was circumcised, and after he was circumcised, he became a member of the Israelite community. Now he had a full heritage in Israel. He was no longer a convert. He was fully there. And actually, during this time praying, this might have been during this rabbinical thing where they try to circumcise him right away. But regardless, you can see that once the circumcision occurs, now they are fully a member of the Israelite community. Just like, you know, and that's where, you know, the infants, you know, on the eighth day, they become circumcised. And so too, you know, just like, you know, when the infant is born, you don't circumcise him right away. You let him have that transitional period, and then you circumcise him. Same too, once the believer has become baptized, that's as if he was being reborn. You give him that transitional period, that 7 day period, and then on the eighth day you circumcise him. So you, and we're not saying you know literal 7 days. You give him that period there. And then, you know, and really, realistically, in the communities, it's at that point in time where, you know, that's when in my opinion, that's when they, once they become circumcised, once they become a full member, that's when they would have that, be able to get a position within the congregation, you know, as an elder, you know, this or that, you know, that they're no longer under the tutor, they're no longer learning Torah, now they're ready to assume a role in the community and in the kingdom, you know, in doing something good. But before that, I mean, you don't send out your ninth grader to go teach other people, would you? And, you know, now you can, you know, you might have your ninth grader teaching some younger children, but you wouldn't send out a ninth grader to teach some adults. You wouldn't set him as the instructor over the class, right? That he hasn't fully been incorporated into that adulthood, and I hope that's making sense to you. Now, for us, we have that in our own lives, but in the fullness of our entire life, and really the fullness of the kingdom of Israel, that rite of incorporation is going to come again for the nation in the future at two specific points in time, which we'll talk about here. When Yeshua returns, that is when he ratifies the new covenant. That's, you know, he says, I'm not going to drink of this cup until I'm in my Father's kingdom. That means that the covenant is not fully integrated, fully ratified. We're living under the promise of the new covenant. And at that point in time, there's going to be the circumcision of the heart. And then if you read in Ezekiel, no uncircumcised person who is uncircumcised in heart or in flesh shall enter into the city of, I believe it's the whole city of Jerusalem. For sure, definitely not the temple. So I believe just like in Joshua, when they got to the land, there was a mountain of foreskins. Hey, that's what's going to happen in the kingdom, I believe. There's going to be another mountain of foreskins where people there are circumcised in the flesh. But for certain, at that point in time, we'll be circumcised in the heart. He'll give us that heart of flesh so that we won't have that evil inclination to overcome. We'll be able to willingly live by his commandments. And part of that's going to be cleansing the world of all this nonsense that's going on. You know, you've got the marriage supper of the Lamb, new names, new robes. All of that is this whole concept. Because remember, getting a new robe, the robes, the garments, represented who you were in the ancient Near East. You know, the high priest, when he went in, or any of the priests, when they went into their official functions, they put on the priestly robes so that people saw that they were priests. So too, when we get into the kingdom, because we're going to be new roles, new people. We're going to get new robes representing our new position in there. Okay, let me see if I want to do this. I think we've already talked about a lot of these. Let's go through these and quickly before we finish up here. I want to look at a couple more of the writings of Paul here, just so we can really see, that he was understanding. So let's go to Romans 6, verse 11 through 16. So you also reckon yourselves to be dead indeed to sin, but alive to Elohim and Messiah Yeshua our Master. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body to obey it in its desires. Neither present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves to Elohim to be alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness to Elohim. For sin shall not rule over you, for you are no longer under the law, but under favor. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under Torah, but under favor? Let it not be. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves as servants for obedience, you are servants of the one whom you obey, either sin to death or obedience to righteousness? Now, a lot of times they try to say, oh, we're no longer under the Torah. We don't have to keep the Torah. That's not what under the Torah means. If he wanted to say you don't have to keep Torah, he would have said, we no longer have to keep Torah. He said, we're no longer under the law, under Torah. And what does under Torah mean? That means being a slave to sin and death. Not because you have to keep the Torah, but being under the Torah means you're not keeping the Torah. You're under the curse of the Torah because you failed to keep the Torah. The Torah is a curse to those who fail to keep it, right? We have forgiveness of sins because, I mean, if you look at the Torah, the Torah itself includes forgiveness of sins. The only thing that there was no forgiveness in the Torah for was willful, rebellious sin. The penalty was death. Yeshua paid the penalty for us, right? His death purchased, redeemed us out of that pit of death into life. And so we are no longer under that curse because we deserve death. But that doesn't mean we don't keep the Torah. And if we do, if we present ourselves to sin, if we go back and we start breaking the Torah willfully and rebelliously, now we're back under the Torah, under that curse. Because Hebrews talks about, what Messiah, you can't crucify a Messiah twice. Let's go next to Galatians 4. And we're almost done here. So just hang on here with me. These things are really amazing, I'm telling you. Galatians 4, verse 1 through 6. For I say, as long as the heir is a child, he is no different from a slave, though he is master of all, but under the guardians and trustees until the time prearranged by the father. So we also, when we were children, were under the elementary matters of this world, being enslaved. But when the completion of time came, Elohim sent forth his son, born of a woman under Torah, to redeem those who are under Torah, in order to receive the adoption as sons. Because you are sons, Elohim has set forth the spirit of his son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, also an heir of Elohim through Messiah. So what is he talking about here? When you're a child is no different than a slave because they're under a master. They're being under something. They have to be learned. They're learning. They're under an instructor, basically. And so what he's talking about is that while we're under, we're all the same. We don't have this adoption as sons. But once we once Yeshua came forth and redeemed us out of that, we're no longer under that tutor. Doesn't mean we're no longer under the Torah. Doesn't mean we don't keep the Torah. It just means, as I was saying, we don't have to pay that penalty for willful rebellious sin for our previous mistakes. If we mess up in the future and it's not covered by Torah, That's a place where I don't want to be at. Let's just put it that way. I don't know what happens. The scripture, Hebrews, seems to indicate things aren't going to work out so well for you. I'm not going to be the judge of that. Let's just say I will never rebel against my king. He is my king, and I guarantee you I'll mess up, but I will repent, and it will not be rebellious. I will repent, and I will turn, and I will do whatever it takes to make things right between me and him again. And remember that even though we have the price has been paid, we aren't actually fully redeemed yet. If you look in Ephesians 4, verse 30, it tells us this. It tells us that, do not grieve the set-apart spirit of Elohim, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Right? Redemption, really, the redemption does not occur until the resurrection of the dead, until the return of the Messiah, right? Let's look at one last verse here before we close up. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19. For though I am free from all, I made myself a servant to all in order to win more. And to the Yehudim I became as a Jew, that I might win the Jews. To those who were under the Torah, as under the Torah, so as to win those under the Torah. To those without Torah, as without Torah, not being without Torah towards Elohim, but under Torah of Messiah, so as to win those who are without the Torah. To the weak I became weak, so as to win the weak. To all men I became all, so as to save some by all means. I do this because of the good news, and so have become a fellow partaker in it. Right? So what Paul is talking about here, once again, is these rites of passage. He goes into this transitional state to bring himself to that level of that person. Now, that's not saying, he clearly says not being without Torah towards Elohim, right? He's not saying that he becomes lawless, that he starts committing sin, but he puts himself in that transitional state with these people in that conversion process. It's like today. I mean, if you're around those in Judaism, you should, what Paul's saying was, if he was in here today, he would be keeping the traditions that those in Judaism were keeping, as long as obviously not violating the Torah. But when he's around, the Christians, he would behave a little bit more like them, but still keeping the Torah. He wouldn't have to do he wouldn't do all the same things there. So it's that whole transitional phase until they're fully incorporated in order to save some. So to finish up here, the last thing I just wanted to briefly mention is that this understanding has finally given me an answer to something I've been looking for a long time. I've always been fascinated, and probably a lot of other people, I've always been fascinated with the millennial kingdom because it really doesn't talk a lot. It tells us what happens at the beginning, and it tells us what happens at the end, but in between, not a lot of information. Does that sound like something that we've been talking about here? Yeah, the rites of passage, right? Remember when we talked about the transitional period is often ambiguous. It's trials and testing, training. And during that time frame, a lot of times there's not a lot recorded. Just like in the transition from Egypt, from slavery to Israel, to being kings in the land, it told us what happened at the beginning and it told us what happened at the end. We don't really know a lot what happened between the time in those 40 years because it was a transitional period. That's what the millennial kingdom is all about. In our state right now, we cannot enter in to the presence of Yahweh himself. He is inviting us, but we have to go through the rites of passage. We have to go through the separation, i.e., we talk about the resurrection of the dead, the death and rebirth, purification. Why is the temple built in the millennial kingdom? Maybe to purify us. Make a little bit of sense, because remember, those sin offerings aren't about forgiveness of sins so much as they're about purification because of the consequences, the consequences. The when you sin, it creates an effect on the world. And the sin offering and the purification offering is, was done to remove that effect that you had on the world. And so that's gonna, and that, you know, that's something that's talked about in Ezekiel 40 through 48. It talks about there will be a temple, there will be an altar, and there will be sin sacrifices. Why? Because we're purifying out from our old self. We're learning to live in accordance with that priesthood. We're learning to transition. And at the end, there's going to be an incorporation. There's going to be, it talks about the evil come and they're destroyed by fire. I mean, and I don't want to mix up concepts here, but it's similar to the concept of a fire, you know, that whole burnt offering. I don't like to say that the people themselves are a whole burnt offering, but I mean, even the scriptures talk about, you know, Yahweh says, "I gave Egypt as your ransom." The firstborn of Egypt were the payment to free Israel from Egypt. And so we see that whole, at the end of the period, there's that thing where there's a burning up of life. And at the end of that period, we are finally given that highest state of holiness where now we can dwell with the Father, within us in the fullest sense, that he can actually live within his people and amongst his people. So I hope and I pray that this has been a blessing to you again. Please let me know, you know, if you enjoyed this. Let me know if you have comments, feedback, you know, anything like that. It's always great to hear back from people. If you have any comments, questions, concerns, if you need the resources, I have everything available to you. If I've said something wrong, let me know. I will do my best to rectify it, to change it if I'm wrong. But other than that, I hope that you guys all have a great week and a great Shabbat, whatever day you're watching this. I hope that your Shabbats are wonderful, and I hope that, you know, coming into the feast seasons, I hope that this has really enhanced your understanding of what the feasts are truly about and given you a greater love and understanding and desire to keep the feasts. So until next time, shalom.
He still speaks from heaven each and every day. I'll let Israel say.